Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Send me videos of all the kids in assembly screaming my name. That fills me with absolute love and pride. Like, I mean, like nothing else. And I want to inspire them. I'm just a normal boy from Monday Town. Like.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome to episode 123, The Racing Pod on Off the Ball. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, bit of crack as well. Reminder as well, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your podcasts. It's John Duggan with you as always. Johnny Ward taking a well-deserved break this week, but delighted to have Irish Fields' Tom Malone in studio with me. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, not too bad, John. I think we've got to kind of really work on lifting the mood generally across the office today because it's...
No better sport than racing.
No better sport.
It lives in its own world anyway.
Absolutely. It really does. And I suppose the Curragh can make itself happy in that it certainly will not be the most underwhelming sporting event this weekend. But it's a good weekend. There's plenty going on and so we're just looking forward to the Nationals coming into view, yeah. Irish and English.
How are you feeling jumps-wise? Did you enjoy Cheltenham? Are you already casting your mind to the Grand Nationals? Because we have Monday week is the Irish Grand National and then the following week is the Saturday of the Antrim Grand National, just a fortnight away. Tomorrow.
Yeah, always kind of a victim of the calendar, isn't it? Every couple of years you end up with the two Nationals so close together that it is an impact. But I'm looking forward to the Grand National. It seemed like, we got a few doomsaying pieces during the week and saw that in the Racing Post. And
it's the weekender, yeah.
And it was just, talking about that, the race has changed and there's no good. It's kind of like, well, that's just what happens. You know what I mean? When you put that much money into a race, you can't go and win £1 million race with some donkey you bred yourself. Like that's just a ludicrous proposition. So yeah, look, I'm looking forward to the Grand National. It's a top quality race now. Of course, it's completely different to what it used to be, but we kind of live in an age where it kind of has to be better. Ruby Walsh told a story on the Jockey Club social media account there, and he's, it's a good yarn about how he remounted Papillon in 2001.
Yes, I saw that story. Yeah.
And they hacked around. It's like, you can't do that now, but it's probably for the better that you don't only have seven runners going out into the second circuit at a, and
I think the argument was that it is kind of now in the preserve of big stables, big yards, and it's turned into like a classic handicap as opposed to, horses that might be really suited to the demands of the race that don't get a look in anymore.
Yeah, I feel like more races need to go the way of the Grand National rather than the Grand National going backwards. We have a massive issue with small fields in graded races. And if you made more of these graded races handicaps, then you are far more likely to end up with more horses running in them, I can see that. Look, there are very few romantic stories, but, if you put £1 million on the table, like the big guys are going to want to gobble it up. That's just the reality of life, and that's the way things are going. And it's the kind of evolution of the sport. Like you look at Dan Skelton and what he's done this year, and he's obviously gone and said, well, he is a Paul Nicholls trainee, but he's just looked around and said, well, the Paul Nicholls method is not sufficient anymore. Who do you look at? You look at Gordon Elliott, you look at Willie Mullins. What do you have to do? You build the farm and then you fill it with the best you can possibly buy. It's about dominating the sales ring and then it's about having the best owners and the best of the best. And it's an expensive, big operation, but that's what you have to do if you want to go and compete at the grandest stage. And yes, maybe it lacks a bit of romanticism, but
I just think it's a different thing. When I look at what it's lost is the jumping test that it was.
It has. That's what, look. Like, as soon as Tiger Roll won two Grand Nationals, that
I grew up. I'm kind of heartbroken about it because I grew up loving the warrior nature and the attritional spirit nature of the Grand National, that it was man and beast, and you would get to the end of the line, the winning post after 4.5 miles, and it was gladiatorial almost. It felt for me as a child watching it, I was just going, look, obviously you want the horse to be as safe as possible, but I just don't know, is there a way of doing it safely that will penalise horses that can't jump around as well as other horses?
Yeah, mate, but even you see what happened to Cheltenham in the Fox Hunters there, I mean, the fellow that won the Fox Hunters, and he's absolutely chested the fence and stayed on his feet. Like, that shouldn't happen. Like, the jumps have to be a penalty as well.
Yes.
You know, and that,
so we don't want fodders that are unnecessary that could lead to injuries, but you want a penalty for making mistakes, offences.
Yeah.
And I think they could need to go a bit further in how they construct the penalty.
100%. They need to look at something like, as I said, making that mistake that horse made at the last in the Fox Hunters should be, I'm not saying it should be a race ending mistake, but it should have more of an impact than it did on him, where you can clearly see like his foot is only over the advertising hoarding. That's how deep he goes through it.
With the Grand National Group, was okay, can I spot the best jumper here and see, will the best jumper go and try and win it? Mr. Frisk, Laura Galen. These are the horses I love growing up watching in the Grand National, West Hip. And Papillon was a brilliant jumper. You talk about Ruby Walsh, their brilliant jumper, never fell in his life. And I don't think it's the race that it was for that reason. It's just turned into another handicap that almost resembles the Albert Bartlett in ways to me.
Yeah. That is the sad element of it. But I got to say, personally, when I watched the race last year, I remember feeling a lot better about racing, seeing so many horses in contention going out onto the straight, seeing so many horses not fall. Now, it's well stewarded too. You have to kind of give credit too. Like, I mean, I think maybe it was badly stewarded before. Like, if you go to point and a jockey picks up a stick and gives a horse a smack when he's out of contention, he will get a ban. And sometimes I feel like they don't apply those rules always to actual racing. And, you know, so it's well stewarded and the jockeys are well briefed on it too. And, you know,
was a very classy winner last year. Nick Rocket was a classy horse.
Very classy horse. Yeah, as is I Am Maximus. You know what I mean? As is I Am Maximus. I think he's a really classy. Anyway, and I Am Maximus, I would say, is not a classic good jumper, a good chaser, even though he hasn't actually fallen. He's not
a proven stayer. I mean, the one thing about him is he stays all day. I mean, the way he won the Irish National, the way he won the English National, that turbo boost at the end.
Absolutely. And look, as you said, when you see Tiger Roll, who's, you know, a whisker over 15 hands winning a National, you know it's not the jumping test it was when he, you know, essentially you can hurdle the races, run, drag your belly through them and just get across them A to B as quickly as possible. And when you have so many fences, you're talking about that, you know, it's the benefit of nearly 30 lengths.
Did you enjoy Cheltenham this year? What did you take out of Cheltenham?
I did. I enjoyed it. The ground was an issue. Like, it was too quick. And I probably didn't factor it into my own personal betting enough. I couldn't believe how... and some of the feedback I've heard from trainers afterwards were very disappointed with the state of the ground. Not necessarily because it was quick ground, but rather because it was inconsistent. And that's the real issue. You know, if you walk a track and you say, oh, it's good to soft here, but it's nearly good there and it's soft there, you know, it just needs to be a consistent surface. So look, maybe there's an issue on that. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it, you know, and I think that, you know, I thought the Gold Cup was absolutely brilliant. That performance by Gaelic Warriors just... outstanding, you know.
One of the best Gold Cup winners you're ever going to see. Oh, one horse race.
Just, right? It looked like he joined in at the bottom of the hill, didn't he? Like, you know, he just...
Great. I mean, Paul Tennant, though, very top of his game.
Yeah.
And has been for a long time now.
He has, and it's almost taken for granted. You know what I mean? Like, there's very few situations where you have someone like Ruby Walsh, and obviously the transition was very well managed because Paul Tennant was his understudy for so long. But the transition's been seamless. You know, there's no, like, you know, and he's very careful with the mounts he takes. He takes care of himself. He takes care of his body. He's very selective. What, he only rode, like, he only took, like, sort of four rides a day. Only rode in one handicap. You know, focus on the big races. And he just delivered, didn't he?
Calmly delivered, yeah.
Yeah. Even, like, you know, you hear Willie Mullins post-race and he's like going, oh, I was thinking about any power, and he's thinking about horses falling at the last. And you can just almost tell by Paul Tennant's body language, he's just so in the zone. He's just hit that stride, you know. And even the way, like, he just coming into the last when he's so much horse underneath him, you know, so many jockeys would be tempted to kind of just sit back and just tap on the brakes a little bit. But he just... you know, lent into the horse's withers and really just, you know, you just love to see him just keep him going forward, find the stride and just out and gone, you know.
Are you easy to adjust then with the flip that the flat is now back and as you've got two sports going?
Yeah.
Almost hurling and football being right together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this weekend of the car. Great.
Constitution Hill.
I mean,
What are you on this? Because it seems to be...
I have completely flipped on this, John. I have no shame in saying I was totally against this about 2 months ago. And now, two races that I have sat down with the entire family and watched. We're on the all-weather in the evening, Constitution Hill in his two starts. And yeah, he's clearly a pattern performer on the flat. There's no doubt about that. Even Simple Maths will tell you that. But he's adjusted to it very well. He travelled very strongly on Wednesday night. He's going to, you know, in a race that was not run to suit. You know what I mean? He could easily, look, the way the cutaway is at Kempton, you wouldn't get boxed in, but he still, it wasn't completely straightforward. Heads to the John Porter next at Newbury. I think he's going to get a little break after that.
Is he going to be Royal Ascot?
Autumn campaign. He's not going to Royal Ascot. So, but, I mean, for the Curragh, it could be great news for the Curragh because he could go to the Irish St. Ledger. Like Nicky Henderson says, have horse, have
Melbourne
passport,
Cup,
will
possibly
travel. I don't think he passed the vet for the Melbourne Cup. I just think, not that I think there's anything wrong with the horse. I just think if you're a 9-year-old horse and you have had injury holdups, it'll probably show up something.
Is he a group performer in the flat?
He should be, yeah. He should be, at least. Even the Simple Maths would tell you, even if you take, you know, £50 from his, even take £60 from his peak jumps performance, that still leaves him a pattern performer. And, you know, if you're to, you know, back at the fag packet type calculations, you say generally take £40-odd, maybe if they're exceptional, take £45 down. So by any metric, he should be a 110, 120 plus horse in the flat. Again, it's not. They're just very simple calculations. But like what he's shown, there's no real reason. Look, he'll have the John Porter give him his third run on the flat. That will be his. Then he'll have a handicap mark. I think he's near on favourite for the Ebor. It's a very exciting strand to add to the flat season that needs something, I think.
Albert Einstein, you were just going to mention there, does run on Saturday here at the Curragh. Soft to heavy ground, but it has been quite a dry at times this week. So the Gladden Stakes, 3:05, listed race, 10 runners, 7 furlongs. The interesting thing about this is that Aidan O'Brien has never won the Newmarket Guineas with a horse that's run already in the same season. All of his Guineas winners, the 10 of them, have been first-time out winners in the year that they've won as three-year-olds. So, but they're going to try a different approach here with Albert Einstein.
Yeah, I think with Albert Einstein, he just needs a run because obviously he hasn't been seen since he won the Marble Hill, had whatever.
Last May.
You know.
Long time.
Yeah. And like, he's had issues with horses going into. Now look, the last two, I'm just thinking the last two Guineas where, you know, City of Troy, like, you know, where the likes of City of Troy blew out the horse before him as well, who both went on to be Derby winners. But the profile of those horses were always to be Derby winners. You know what I mean? Whatever they did along the way was very much bonus territory. You know, you go try and win your Derby. There's only one Derby.
Was it August Rodin? Was that the
one? August Rodin as well. And then obviously, you know, you then he's won a Champion Stakes as well. You know, City of Troy won an international. So, you know, they win their Derby, then they need to win over 10 furlongs to prove they are a proper stallion. But like, there's no way Albert Einstein is a Derby horse. He just absolutely can't be. You know, he's all speed. You know, it's actually the question of, can he get a mile? So steps up to 7 furlongs for the first time. I am actually, weirdly, I was actually at the races both days he won as a 2-year-old. He's just the most exceptional physical. Like, he's huge.
Why is that now?
So he's huge. He looks like Sprinter Sacre. Like, he looks like a big champion chaser. He walked onto the track at Nace last year and like, he's, you know, he's like a man amongst boys. It's like playing a fella who's overage in a minor team. That's kind of what, that's the only analogy I can think of. You know what I mean? He's walking around with shoulders and a beard and there's a whole load of lads and they're just spindly little things, you know, and that's what it was like last year in his 2-year-old career. They obviously rode him in the Marble Hill to try and get a bit of cover and make him think because he'd obviously had so, everything had come so easy for him and they kind of got him into trouble almost on purpose to then see what he'd do and he figured it out no problem and won well. He's a very, very exciting horse. It's just a question of how he'll do stepped up in trip. But, you know, he's, like I said, the horses that have been beaten in the Guineas in the last couple of years have been Derby horses. There's no way this is a Derby horse. It's just a question of whether he can see out a mile, but he's an exceptional horse. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, well, Aidan O'Brien's called him a freak. And like the way he was talking about City of Troy, he was almost talking of him, you'd almost compare him to the next coming of Pegasus. I don't think he ended up as that. He didn't end up as Shergar, but he ended up still a very impressive Derby winner.
Yeah, I think he broke the track record at Sandown in the international as well and, you know, beat Calandigan, who's now the best horse in the world.
So they've changed their mind. But I know the reason now is because it's all about speed and can he get a mile? He could be a 7 furlong, 6 furlong horse. But look, obviously he'd be ready as much as he can, but you know, he'll come on from the run. Does that make him vulnerable though? Tomorrow is an odd long shot.
I've seen that, like, he's still sort of 8 to 11, you know, he's eased. You know, you think if he was gunned, he'd be, you know, kind of 1 to 2 type horse. You know, also separate of 7 furlongs, that shouldn't be an issue. First time out. Like, from a betting point of view, you look at 10 Bob Tony, who has plenty of good form, and maybe Saracen. But on Saracen, I'd want to see him in the parade room before I'd make any decisions about him, just to see how fit looking he is. Because obviously he has some really top class form as well. But I'd like to see what Albert Einstein looks like in the parade ring.
So you ride horses, obviously, Tom. How do you know, say, when we're looking at flat horses, if you're sent to somebody who's going to go down and look at the paddock, what should they be looking for in terms of fitness this time of year?
You want to see that they are clearly fit. You know what I mean? They're fit, but not overfit. So you'll...
What are the characteristics of that?
So you'll...
Fit versus burly, as it were.
Yeah, you just see their shape. You know, you won't want them kind of too... You want to see plenty of girth around, you know, their chest and their shoulders, and you want to see a good neck. But you just want to be able to maybe see a rib or two, but not... like absolutely ripped either, because you want to be able to see that they have enough fitness to do themselves justice, but not so fit that they're over the top. Obviously that won't be the case at this stage of the year, but you want to be able to, you don't want to, if they're too burly, like Aidan O'Brien will bring his horses very undercooked to the track, and you will see that they're clearly going to come on for the run, that they're just a little bit, so just not super tight around.
When
the
we come to, like, say, Derby Day, or the most important day of the year, what should a horse look like then?
In those days, they will be light on their toes, on like a whippet, you know, they'll just be lean and ready to go, and you'll see real muscle definition across their quarters and down, like, basically kind of along their hamstrings and then down along their chest and their, just kind of along their ribs as well. You might see a rib or two, but you want to see, you know, muscle definition and just the kind of lightness on their toes when they're just, you know, they're really, you know, those fast twitch fibres are ready to go. That's kind of what you're looking for. But you want to see them a little bit excited, but not completely losing it either, because then they're going to, you know, potentially leave the race in the parade ring or knock it over.
Because they've used up too much energy.
Yeah, exactly.
So 10 Bob Tony, probably the horse to give the favourite most to think about, given
you would imagine
won a grade three at Haydock last year, group three even. I'm thinking about the United States classifications over the distance, then third in a group one on the Longchamp in October. Big Gossie won the race last year, but I think this is much tougher now, this opposition.
Look, Big Gossie's the kind of horse, he had his pipe opener there 2 weeks ago, so he...
Well, that is the one benefit for him, maybe as an each way play. East Hampton, actually, his best performance was second in the group two over the course and distance last summer. He's a bit of a big price. Rami won a handicap for Johnny Mercia in September at Leopardstown. Princess Child won a group three at Tipperary last August. Neolithic for Aidan O'Brien was last seen winning at Nace in July. We'll probably hope that he'll come on this year, but...
Yeah, you'd imagine Neolithic...
It's unusual for a three-year-old to be in this.
You'd imagine Neolithic is in there just to keep them honest, just in case they crawl early doors.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't want that to happen. You just want to make sure it's relatively truly run. And, like, the goal here is to find out where Albert Einstein is at and how many steps he has to take to get to a guineas. You know, so they want a truly run race. They'll be going a good lick, but they'll also want a situation where Albert Einstein doesn't have to do all the work as well. If he has a slight fitness issue or he's slightly undercooked, you certainly don't want to be sending him out in front and then have to, you know, fill him up and he's vulnerable then. You'd rather just, you know, get a little toe into the race.
Does he win?
Go from there. I think he does. I think at 8 to 11, I think if you're getting kind of 8 to 11, he's kind of, you just have to have a play at that. But look, the obvious class angle here is 10 Bob Tony, and it looks very much a sort of two horse race. And like I said, I'll be looking at Saracen to see how fit he is. You're still getting you've got 9 runners, so you're still getting each way 3 places. So Saracen has a bit of class.
Let's look at the Maidan card on Saturday. They're pretty hopeful that the Meijin will be unaffected by the bad weather they've had in Dubai. The Shima Classic has got 6 runners on turf, good ground, 4:10 on Saturday, 1.5 miles. Look, Calandagan is at least £9 clear in the racing, second in this last year, but then improved to win the King George and Queen Elizabeth Stakes at Ascot and then the Japan Cup. I mean, if he's ready for this, he should win, shouldn't he?
Yeah, you would think so. You would think so. And look, it's a very big pot. And like with a horse like him, it's a, you know, it's a global campaign. I imagine they want to, you know, really focus on getting all those, you know, big, big, races all around the world with him. And yeah, I think Kalan, look, he's 4-11. It's not very clever, but you think he was next in the market, Ethical Diamond. You know, yes, obviously he won in, you know, he won in America.
Belmar, the Breeders' Cup Turf.
Yeah. But
he needs to show that was not a fluke, though.
He does really need to show that's not a fluke. And like, Calandigan really should be in a different league to most. You'd imagine someone like Royal Power, if you had your eight runners, he'd be a nice each way player.
Yeah, because we're running in handicaps, Royal Power, obviously in Godolphin colours. Giovelletto has the benefit of race fitness, but form to find with the favourites, Calandigan.
Yeah, I think you're looking through the entire, you know, Maidan card. Imagine you probably do a couple of doubles and trebles. You got the likes of Forever Young there as a
Yeah, we can get to him in a moment, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you've got the likes of Ombudsman as well in the Shima Classic or the Turf or whatever. So it's like, there's quite a lot of short price favourites.
Staggering money on offer. Staggering.
Yeah. I mean, just the prize money is absolutely incredible.
It is. Just looking here for the Dubai World Cup in sterling, just over £5 million sterling.
Yeah. So you can see why the Japanese Raiders come over.
Forever Young, one of them.
And it's kind of important for Dubai and the Dubai World Cup that they do get, like, they have to put on those purses to get these horses. So, yeah, it's Forever Young is a potential kind of global superstar. And you'd hope that these guys then come to Royal Ascot and stuff as well.
Well, this is a little bit more interesting than the Shima in that he's not a penalty kick. He's odds on, but he's not a penalty kick.
No.
Look, he has definitely come on because he had a trio of third place finishes, including in this race last year when he disappointed relative to his ability. The Breeders' Cup Classic, he was third. Kentucky Derby, he was third. But has improved now. He's now five. He's won a Breeders' Cup Classic and he's won a Saudi Cup. So, on the basis of his recent form, he should win, but it's just not certain.
Yeah, and
I'd be more confident in Calandigan, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Same. And look, Maidan has been, you know, well named, but like,
this is on dirt, this race.
Yeah.
10 furlongs.
He's been well campaigned over there. I know he's beaten two runs ago, but like, it was a really nice run last time out. There was clearly a prep run. You know, Simon Christopher, obviously, has a long history of working with Godolphin over the years. He knows the time of day with this sort of, you know, these sort of meetings, this type of horse. And yeah, look, I think Maidan's an obvious sort of each way alternative there. As he said, look, he has that benefit of a few runs as well. He's acclimatized. He's over there. Look, Forever Young has had his prep run too. But look, Maidan at 7-1s, really nice each way price. But again, you wouldn't put people off doing that kind of the treble with, you know, Forever Young, Calandigan and Ombudsman.
Maidan was one I picked out because I agree with you. I think he's progressive. The other one was Imperial Emperor. If you have to, if you're good at forgetting things, he was 11th.
You need to be as a punter, John.
Yeah, he was 11th and last in this race last year, so there must have been an excuse. But on the rest of his form, he does have the profile of a horse who could land this. He's a course and distance winner. He's a Group 1 winner at the track last time. If you can just put a line through it, he's about 10 to 1.
Yeah, and Tygo Shea would have a, you know, he's one of the main jockeys over in Dubai. Like, he'd be routine champion jockey over there. So for him to select, you'd imagine he would have a pick of quite a few of these. So, you know, for him to stick with Imperial Emperor, that's probably pretty notable as well.
What about the Lincoln then? You ever heard of the Spring Double, which is the old bet where you do the double on the Lincoln at Doncaster and the Grand National?
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to do an each way double right now, I would probably go with, what's Iron Maximus? 10-1, isn't he? And the second favourite in the Lincoln here, Eternal Force for Kieran Fallon and William Haggis. I just love William Haggis in these kind of races.
But he's won what now, this race twice in the last decade, and Charlie Appleby's also won it twice in the last 10 years. So they both won 40% of the runnings, yeah. But they only have got two horses in the field of 22.
Yeah, look, I'm a big Eternal Force fan.
Yeah. So you ran up a hat trick for Haggis in the autumn. Kieran Fallon rides, the son of the great Kieran Fallon.
Yeah, and you know, maybe you just throw in the Masters for the ultimate spring treble.
Yeah, spring treble, yeah.
I don't know, I haven't had a look at the Masters betting.
But, not Rory anyway.
You're not, no, but you're going to stick someone like Scotty Scheffler in it. And in each way treble, you got Eternal Force, Iron Maximus and Scotty Scheffler.
I'd probably pick other horses as well.
But Eternal Force is definitely my pick for this, very strongly actually.
Why?
Really nice progressive sort. Will handle the ground. Again, I'm a big fan of anything William Haggis does. Earlier on the season, he targets horses at both the Irish and the English Lincoln, or at least has done in the past. He didn't have one this year. But look, Eternal Force, those three wins. But it's not just that. When you look back through his back form, like, I like to see horses that run in classy maidens and still become classy handicappers. Like, you look at some of the horses he's run into, they're all kind of group, he ran into group performers at maiden level. You know, he'll non-stop opportunities to keep earning, and this is just the first step along the way.
So what else we got in the race? So like Labatt, Jamie Spencer rides second at Royal Ascot last year, ran well at Wolverhampton recently, he was an eye catcher. Anno Domini, I'm talking about Charlie Appleby having winners of this race, is in the Godolphin colours, and Toby Moore takes £7 off, and the horse is fit from racing in Dubai, so that's interesting.
Yeah, and Toby, son of Ryan, has had winners already. He's a very polished little pilot, but I like that kind of Anno. Sometimes I'm not sure how much in hand Anno Domini has versus something like Lethal Force, who I think is very much still on an upward curve. And maybe one as well that has a bit of back class is Galeron there, who's off a mark in 95 now. He won a massive sales race at the Curragh a couple of years ago, I think as a two-year-old, but has bits and pieces of back class there and off a mark in 95. Again, Charlie Hills, the Hills family have quite a good reputation in those kind of big handicaps as well. So wouldn't put you off him at a slightly bigger price, but Eternal Force is very much the selection for me.
There's three horses that are attracting money as you record this on Friday. So one is Greek Order, fourth, first time out at Royal Ascot last year. Then his form tailed off completely in the autumn. Greek Order is trained by
Michael Bell,
and Jason Hart rides him. The other one attracting money is for Hector Crouch in the saddle for Rafe Beckett, Valvano. Plenty of course experience at Doncaster. And then the one at a rag price, about 50 to 1, La Trinidad, is a 9-year-old now, past course and distance winner, but is attracting some each way nibbles.
The thing is, as well, it's so difficult these early season handicaps because you've so little form to go on. You're just, you know, there is so much hope, but obviously the hope is internal as well. You know, everyone is still walking around the yard. All their horses are still unbeaten this year. You know, you're thinking, oh, this could be my spring horse. All the bubbles are still alive in the flat world. So, you'd imagine that some of that could be behind some of that, you know, early season money when, again, you don't always know, you know kind of what yards will have their horses more forward than others. But, it's always an interesting aspect to it.
We have Sam Norris and William Hill on the line. How are you, Sam?
Very good, guys. Yeah, yourselves?
You're not too bad, Sam. So the Lincoln, obviously always a popular betting race on a Saturday, a real Saturday classic race, kind of really at the start of the flat season in the UK. So what is the William Hill market telling us?
Yeah, thrilled to have sponsorship of this race again this year. We've got the whole weekend at Doncaster, which, as you say, it's the traditional curtain raiser. So it was a weird start to the flat season because you have this meeting and then it kind of goes quiet for a couple of weeks until it sort of really gets rolling. But the market for this has been absolutely fascinating. Again, we've got a nice set of each way turns for punters. We're a 50 odds at a quarter. We're a quarter of the odds, 5 places in the main market. And then you can get up to 8 places via each way extra as well. So hopefully a good opportunity for those each way players in the race. Labatt is the big bogey in the book, anti-post, 4-1 favourite with us at the moment. It was a very eye-catching run last time around at Wolverhampton in the trial for this. Unfortunate not to win at Royal Ascot last season. This appears to be the plan. Punters have kind of seen that and they've reacted accordingly. So that's one that we'd like to get beat. Eternal Force is second in 9-2 for last year's winning trainer, William Haggis. Won 3 races on the spin last summer. Didn't get levelled by the handicappers. There could still be a bit of room off his mark. He's been popular enough. And at bigger prices, a horse we'd like to keep on side in the race is Urban Lion at 14-1. We think he's got maybe a better chance than his current odds suggest. Very solid effort in the Cambridgeshire last season. He finished 9th overall, but he was a close-up third in his group on the near side, maybe drawn the wrong side of the track that day. So Urban Lion's one we'd like to keep on side. And, you know, it's the kind of race you give those the chances to. Galeron was maybe a bit unfortunate getting beat last year. He arrives £7 lower this time around, showing the liking for Doncaster before Jack Callan takes 5 off his back. He's 12-1. I've kind of always thought there might be another big handicap in Bo Pedro. He's 33-1, but he has become frustrating in recent times. But, yeah, Labatt's the loser in the book. Urban Lion, we'd like to keep on side. But a really good betting heat to kind of lift the lid on the UK flat season.
What's your fancy in it yourself, Sam?
I've gone back and forward with a few horses. With the forecast rain, I think that might suit Thunder Roar. And the idea is that it's supposed to rain today. I'm not a million miles away from Doncaster and it's not raining at the moment. But if we get a drop of rain, Thunder Roar likes soft ground, has won here at Doncaster before. 28-1, I think he's a big price. But yeah, we could do with a bit of rain. I think it's good to soften the moment. We were forecast rain today rather than tomorrow. So if that arrives, I think he'd have a squeak at 28.
What about the Spring Mile? I mean, I'm just looking at the field here for the Spring Mile earlier in the day. What, 225 always kind of it's almost a consolation race. So that'd be, I don't know if that's the right way of describing it, but
yeah, it is.
Yeah, so you've got Mezcala as favourite for George Bass in the saddle.
Yeah, for horses who didn't get in the Lincoln, you know, sometimes it's a harder race to solve than the Lincoln. I think we get that through the course of the year, actually. Sometimes consolation races can be tougher than the race they were all going for. Same set of each-way terms here, 5 places at a quarter in the standard market, up to 8 places with each-way extra. Mezcala had been the kind of talking horse all through the course of the week into 5-1. But in the last day or so, we have laid quite a bit of a stable debutant for Mick Appleby called Intrusively, who's 16-1 in from 25-1. Now, we always sit up and take note when Mick Appleby acquires a horse from another yard, he's got a really good record with those that he picks up from elsewhere. Admittedly, they're not always running in races like this. A lot of them will be running in kind of all-weather handicaps at the South Wales, etc. of this world. But his record has to be noted, and the form is there for the horse, really. I mean, he ran huge here at 50-1 back end of last season, was behind Desperate Dan that day, won the race he reopposes. Galeron and Valvano were second and third. They obviously run in the Lincoln. And this lad was fourth. So I think he's worth his place in this company. And it would not be a surprise at all if Mick Appleby has improved this horse a little from previous connections. So 25s into 16s, Intrusively, the mover in the Spring Mile.
Keep an eye on Stephen Thorne's Irish Raider here, Far From Dandy. Colin Keane rides fourth in the Irish Lincoln recently at the Curra. And he's attracting a little bit of support. He's what best price with Hills, 14-1. Might be worth a euro each way.
Yeah, and he's a trainer that's really burst out of the blocks. He's only had a license for what? I think just only his second season there, is it? He's really just he's flying, and he just doesn't have a big string, but seems to just train so many winners. And he's certainly one, if I was in the trading room, which thankfully I'm not, I'd certainly keep his horses on side, because they just win so often, don't they?
Yeah, we have the listed race as well, Doncaster 257 on Saturday. This looks pretty open, doesn't it? Like, it's between 7-4 and 11-2 the field for 5 runners, Sam.
Yeah, and it's a strange renewal of this race, really, because we've got 2 horses who won major Group 1 races over a mile last season. They're probably closer to this level than they are proven Group 1 winners. But Docklands, who, you know, sprung a bit of a surprise when winning at Royal Ascot and the Queen Anne at 20-1. And Kirat, who sprung an enormous surprise when taking the Sussex Stakes.
I'd say you guys in your trading room have posters of Docklands and Kirat up on the in the tea room.
Kirat especially, yeah. That was his result that day, getting Uzi Pacemaker for Field of Gold.
So we
were pretty pleased with that. But I think I think Docklands is probably a better horse than Kirat. Although he did run all right in the City of York after that upset win last season, Kirat. But I think Docklands is probably the more solid of the two. The mover has been excellent, believe. He was 11-2 outside of the field yesterday. He's into 4-1. I think Jack Shannon's going to have a big season. He's got a few live chances this weekend. So, yeah, interested to see the money for Excellent Believe from 11-2 into 4-1. But it's a really puzzling race for punters, because you've got to work out what you think of Docklands and Kirat and quite how good they are versus this opposition in this sort of grade. It's a fascinating renewal, but not for the reasons we usually call races a fascinating renewal.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think it's tricky.
The Aberlandstein debate is going to be much clearer, isn't it, tomorrow afternoon? I mean, that's probably tempers enthusiasm for taking him on at odds on, like taking him on in terms of like backing him at the Curra tomorrow. Maybe wait and see what that impacts his guinea's price.
Yeah, this is a real puzzle as well. We've been keen to try and lay our fair share of Albert Einstein. You know, a bit of a rarity, obviously, for Aidan O'Brien to have a run before the English guineas. It's looking like, you know, maybe the Irish guineas is going to be the target, but he's a bit weak in the betting, so he's not been all that popular. 4-6 at the moment. Obviously, it's going to be different ground to what he ran on last season as well, when it was sort of top of the ground. Going to be softer than that this time around. It's got to be interesting that Ryan Moore rides here instead of, you know, filling up the book in Group 1 company in May Dan. Princess Child, I guess, is a kind of grubby looking each way option at 7-1 for Joseph O'Brien. Got beat on Arc Weekend last year, but didn't run badly. And the Irish form over this kind of trip is very solid and has, you know, proven herself on the slightly deeper ground. But I mean, you guys will know more about it than me. What are the vibes in Ireland? Because we're very surprised to see Aidan O'Brien running this horse if the Newmarket Guineas is his target. Does it feel like he's going to go Irish Guineas instead?
It just feels like, I suppose, and as we mentioned kind of earlier, previous horses are a lot of horses that he's run in the Guineas are Derby horses ultimately, whereas I suppose Albert Einstein, they need to find out. And the only real classic, you know, if you're thinking he has to win a classic as a stallion making experiment, you know, the only one he has a chance of winning is one of the 2000 Guineas. So, but yeah, I just imagine they just need to get a run into him because he hasn't run since last May. I wouldn't be too concerned about him popping out again, you know, in whatever, 3-4 weeks time. But yeah, one of the compliments I took from it is that they're very complimentary about his mentality. He just seems to take everything in his stride and he's a very mature horse. And obviously, you know, they had nothing, they said last year, to go with him as a 2-year-old, and they still ended up with a slew of 2-year-old Group 1 winners. So it's kind of easy to see why he's top of the pile. But yeah, it's just whether he can stay. It's whether they can turn him into a miler. There's no doubt in his class.
What about Maidan, Denny? Is there anything that we should know about Maidan on Dubai World Cup Day, Sam?
Yeah, glorious looking card at Maidan. The big race of the night, the 4:45, is one that we're rolling each way extra out on. So you obviously get that concession UK and Irish racing every day of the week. But there's 9 runners in that. You can dabble in the 4-place market if you so choose. There's kind of a clear treble that's emerging for punters already. The final 3 races on the card, Ombudsman and Calandagan, obviously 2 of the best turf horses in the world, all rolling into Forever Young in the final race of the night, the World Cup, probably the best dirt horse in the world. That's a treble we'd like to get beat, but they are all odds on, so that the price is, we're not doing a huge amount of damage, but it is a popular treble emerging. I mean, if you're looking for something alternative in that final race tonight in the 4-place market, Maidan took to the dirt very well last time around, the Simon and Ed Crisford horse, yes. Winning, which was a surprise given his pedigree. I didn't know if he'd run that well on the dirt.
We all like Maidan here,
yeah,
in every way. So
yeah. The track and the horse, he'd be a big player at 13-2. And Tumbarumba has placed in, you know, some major races this year. I think 18-1 and 33-1. His last couple of starts, he's finished second and third. He's 22-1 again here. He could reward each way support. He was maybe a bit unlucky not to win here 2 starts ago, actually. So the win part of that bet is probably live as well. And I'll just chuck one more your way on the Maidan card, just because it comes in a slightly less heralded race than usual. So I think it might be interesting. The 130 is their UAE Derby. And a horse called Wonder Dean, who Christian Demuro rides, was 16-1 in our book yesterday. He's 17-2 now. This is quite a big move for one of the sort of supporting races on Maidan, particularly to see that move Thursday into Friday. He's a Japanese horse. They've got a great record in the race. His form ties in quite closely with Pyromancer, who's favourite for it. Beat him in Japan on debut. Pyromancer's 15-8. I think punters have probably just decided that Wonder Dean was too big in relation to Pyromancer. So that's maybe where the money's come from. But 16-1 into 17-2 for him in the UAE Derby at 130 is an interesting each way move over the last 24 hours.
Wonder Dean and Tumbarumba will be singing when we're winning. if you can get the kind of the weird pun. Okay, we have Tom Malone's charity bet in Johnny Ward's absence. Tom, you got €50 to spend, 25 each way or 50 on the nose. Don't let us down, because Johnny, as we know, sometimes does.
Yeah, okay, look, I'm going to keep it simple here. I'm going to stick with the William Hill Lincoln, and we are sticking with Kieran Fallon and William Haggis and Eternal Force. So just to win the Lincoln, keep his run going, and Eternal Force, charity bet at Doncaster in the Lincoln.
Okay, Eternal Force, number 9 of the 3:32 at Saturday at Doncaster. Eternal Force for William Haggis and Kieran Fallon is Tom Malone's charity bet this week on the Racing Pod. Thanks to William Hill, the price of the horse, 9-2, 4.5-1. The best of luck, Tom. Sam Norris, thanks so much.
Thanks, lads.
Thank you, Cheers, Tom. Appreciate Cheers. You coming in.
Yeah, no worries.
Best of luck with Eternal Force tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll speak soon on the Racing Pod. Remember, it's free every week wherever you get your pods on the Off the Ball digital and social channels. Check out more. Back soon.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill, 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball. Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Sending me videos of all the kids in assembly screaming my name, that fills me with absolute love and pride. Like, I mean, like nothing else. And I want to inspire them. I'm just a normal boy from Aldi Town. Like.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.